विष्णुपाताय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमाते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रेक्षारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे कृष्णकृष्णाय भूतले श्रीमाते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रेक्षारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्या प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत राधा श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृन्द चैतन्या प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृन्द श्री कृष्ण Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Hari Bol Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Thank you. jai ram jai jai ram Hari ram jai ram jai jai ram Hari ram
Sita Ram Jaya Sita Ram
सीताराम जय सीताराम 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 हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम राम हरे हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. I go Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo. I go Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo. I go Hari Bo. Jai Gaur Premanandi. Ayodhya is a very ancient city. The oldest of the Vedic literatures, the Ramayana of Valmiki Muni, speaks the glories of this very holy place. We have come here following in the footsteps of our previous acharyas. Lord Nityananda Prabhu visited here on his pilgrimage. It is said that Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu had visited, as well as Madhavendra Puri. When Nityananda Prabhu came here in the mood of Lakshman, he experienced ecstatic love. We have come here to purify our hearts by begging for the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, who descended in the Treta Yuga in his divine incarnation of Sri Ram. Our acharyas describe that above this material realm there is the Viraja. The Viraja is like a river that separates material existence
from the spiritual world. Beyond the Viraja, which is situated above Brahmaloka, the Brahmajyoti in the Paravyoma are innumerable Vaikuntha planets where Lord Narayan resides, and the various incarnations of the Lord that appear in this world are eternal personalities of the Lord that reside in Vaikuntha planets. Varaha Dev, Narasimha Dev, Vamana Dev. Those who are their pure devotees go to the eternal Vaikuntha planet where they can be served eternally. In the Vaikuntha planets, the devotees serve the Lord in Aishwarya Bhav with great awe and reverence, with complete understanding that you are the Supreme Lord and I am your eternal servant. However, above all other Vaikuntha planets is Ayodhya Dham, the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Ramchandra, where there is relationships with the Lord as friend, as parent, as lover, but it is all with this Aishwarya Bhav. The Supreme Lord Ram has one consort, Sita, who is above all the goddesses of fortune, Lakshmis. And above the Ayodhya Dham is Krishna Loka, which has Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is considered to be the highest realm of all the abodes of the spiritual world. So Rupa Goswami explains that of all the incarnations, besides Krishna, Lord Ramchandra and Lord Narsingadev are of very, very primary importance, because their munificence and their relationships with the devotees are very, very special. It is explained in Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanarataya sambhavami yuge yuge, that the Lord descends into this world to annihilate the miscreants, to reestablish the principles of religion, and to give pleasure to his devotees. When demons come to this world, they create terrible suffering to the inhabitants. And that suffering is an impetus for people to come to the proper understanding that we are helpless without the mercy of the Lord. Therefore, the great scriptures explain that the pleasures of this world are pathways to death, and the sufferings remind us of that reality. So the Supreme Lord descended from his eternal abode of Ayodhya in Vaikuntha through the agency of Chirodakshayi Vishnu for the purpose of relieving the burden of this world in the form of Ravana. While here in Ayodhya, to hear the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Ram, is especially purifying. So please, please, with very rapt attention, hear this ambrosial narration. There was a Rakshasa. Actually, He was from the Rakshasa dynasty. But sometimes people from the Rakshasa dynasties could be pious. They are born of that gotra, but they do not act like their parents. Just like there are some people here from Malecha and Yavana backgrounds, but they're behaving like very, very honest and sincere Vaishnavas. So just because you're born a Rakshasa doesn't mean you have to be a Rakshasa. After all, Vibhishan was born of a Rakshasa, but he was a very pious devotee. That is why Krishna says, Chaturvarnamayastrista guna karma vibhagasha. It is not by birth that we evaluate a person's position. It is by one's activities. So there was this Rakshasa of the name Sumali. And at that time, the demon race was very, very much being trampled on by the demigods. So he was thinking that if we can continue our Rakshasa race through the genealogy of very, very powerful Brahmins, then we can have long duration of power. He had a daughter of the name Kaikashi, who was very, very beautiful and very innocent by heart and full of very virtuous qualities. Sumali told his daughter that you should get married to a great Brahmin sage and you should have children through him. So he told her about a Brahmin who was a rishi performing severe tapasya and gaining tremendous amounts of powers. His name was Vishrava. So knowing that she was before him, he opened his eyes and he accepted her request. But then he wanted to tell her what the future of her desires will be. So he went into meditation and he said, I will have children through you, but because you approached me at a very inauspicious time for children, I will tell you what will happen. Your children will be cruel, bloodthirsty Rakshasas. Now she was a very pious lady, although from a Rakshasa dynasty. So she was horrified to hear this. She fell at his feet and she prayed, please, please, is there something we can do to have nice children? He said that your youngest child will be a very pious and good devotee of the Lord. He will be the very embodiment of Dharma. The first child born from Kaikashi and Vishrava had 10 heads. From the moment that child came out of the womb of his mother, his eyes were ferociously red in anger, and there were burning flames flying out of all of his 10 mouths. He had 20 arms, and he was anger personified. His father named him Dasagriva because he had 10 heads. Later on, because he would cause tears to everyone within the universe, his name became Ravana. His younger brother, when he came out of the womb, he immediately, instantly grew into an all-devouring monster. He was practically big like the universe. And from his very infancy, he was devouring everything and everyone that came in his sight. This child was named Kumbhakarna. The next child that was born was a very, very ugly, deformed, misshapen little girl who grew very big. Her name was Suphanaka. And there were some more children, but the last of the children, the youngest child, was Vibhishan. Very gentle, very polite, very humble, compassionate to all living beings, and always remembering the beautiful pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they lived together. Now Vishava, from one of his other wives, had a son named Kuvera. Kuvera is the treasurer of the demigods. Very wealthy, very pompous. One day Kuvera came to meet his father. When Kaikashi, the mother of Ravana and Kumbhakarna, Suphanaka, and Vibhishan, when she saw Kuvera's opulence, his prestige and power, she said to her sons that you are the son of the same father as him. And you have no opulence, you have no power, you have no abodes like him. You should perform tapasya and you should gain at least equal to Kuvera. So they went to a place called Gokarna. And there they performed tapasya. Kumbhakarna stood on one leg for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, hardly eating and hardly not even sleeping and hardly even breathing. Dasagriva, Ravana, he performed tapasya for 10,000 years. He did not eat or sleep for 10,000 years. And not only that, Kumbhakarna and Ravana, during their tapasya, they followed complete celibacy and the absolute pure morality from the material point of view. Ravana, every 1,000 years, he would cut off one of his heads and put it into the sacred fire. After 9,000 years, he only had one head left. Still, no eating, no sleeping, standing in one place. At the end of the 10,000th year, he was about to cut off his last head. At that time, out of obligation, Lord Brahma had to appear. So he asked Ravana, "What benediction do you want? You have satisfied me." He said, "I want to become immortal." Brahma said, "I have no power to give the benediction of immortality. Ask for something else." So he went down a list. He had everything figured out. He had his notes. But in this Treta Yuga, you didn't have to have notes on paper. You have them right in your mind. He said, I want the benediction that I cannot be killed by any demigod, by any Gandharva, by any Kinara, by any Rakshasa, by any Naga, by any Rishi. He went down the whole list, and at the end of his list, he said, but don't bother giving me the benediction that I cannot be killed by a human being. Because human beings are so insignificant. It is below my integrity. It is an insult to give me the boon that I will not be killed by a human being. It's like, are you going to ask the benediction that you will not be beat up by an ant? You don't even think ants are insignificant. Please understand, what is a Rakshasa? Rakshasas, their race is equal in power and strength to the demigods, except they're evil instead of good. They have duration of lives, power, strength, like the demigods, except instead of being in the mode of goodness, they're very deeply entrenched in the mode of ignorance. Human beings are insignificant. So he asked for these benedictions. Lord Brahma said, so be it. So he considered, I am immortal. Nothing can destroy me. Then Brahma gave him extra benediction, that all the heads that you cut off, I'll give them all back to you, and anyone who ever cuts them off, they'll grow back. And also, you'll be able to change your form into any way you like. And you will have insurmountable powers. He gave the benediction to Vibhishan that he would always be the perfect emblem of Dharma and he would always remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he was about to ask Kumbhakarna what boon he wanted. At that time, all the demigods, they came running to Lord Brahma and said, please listen to us before you ask him. Please, please just come aside and listen to us before you ask him. This Kumbhakarna, he doesn't have any boons yet, and yet he's devouring the whole universe. He's so big, he's just eating everything and everyone. Nothing can stop him. He went to Indra Loka, and Indra's own warriors, his best soldiers, he just put them in his mouth and ate them. We have never ever seen anyone who has ever had such powers and was so ghastly and cruel as Kumbhakarna. He's gigantic. He's bloodthirsty. He's cruel. Now, if you give him benedictions, that will make him even more powerful. Please, don't give him any benedictions. So Brahma was thinking, I have to give him a benediction. He's performed tapasya. So what should I do? Brahma decided a plan. He called his eternal consort. Not eternal consort, but his consort who remains as long as this 300 trillion years of his life. Who is his consort? Saraswati. Who is his consort? Saraswati. Saraswati appeared. Lord Brahma said, Saraswati Devi, you are the goddess of speech. Please enter on the tongue of Kumbhakarna and make him speak what the gods want him to speak. So Saraswati entered onto Kumbhakarna's mass bloodthirsty tongue by her powers. And Brahma said, Kumbhakarna, what benediction do you want? Kumbhakarna, whose voice was like the tumultuous roaring of a mountain. Saraswati Devi made that voluminously loud and irritable tongue speak her words. He said, "I want to sleep. I want to sleep all year round and just be awake one day of the year." So Brahma said, "So be it, go to sleep." And then Saraswati left his tongue and Kumbhakarna was totally bewildered. "What did I say? That's not what I wanted. I did 10,000 years of tapasya. And after all that, and I was following celibacy. I didn't eat any meat. I was courteous to everyone for 10,000 years. Do you know what an austerity it is for me? And I asked for benediction of going to sleep my whole life." So then he went to sleep. Ravana, he became so arrogant due to the powers of the benedictions that he had received. He sent a messenger to Kuvera, who had his abode in Sri Lanka. It was a beautiful golden city, the most opulent place on earth. It was the headquarters of the treasure of the demigods when he was on this earth planet. So knowing Ravana's powers, Kuvera was told, "You get out or you die." This is the message of Ravana. He has decided that Sri Lanka used to be the abode of the Rakshasas, but then it was inherited because they were all defeated by you. Get out or be killed. So Ravana came, and Kuvera, knowing that he was no match to the almighty Ravana, he left. And just to insult him, Ravana even took Kuvera's very famous airplane called Pushpaka. And then to show off his glories, he started traveling around the universe with this Pushpaka. He was traveling over Himalayas, thinking himself to be the conqueror of everything. And the nature of one who becomes proud is we think that everything is meant for our enjoyment. We cannot tolerate to see something we like being enjoyed by someone else. So he saw in the beautiful, beautiful forests of the Himalayas a lovely woman with matted hair sitting down in meditation. He became so much charmed by the beauty of this woman. He decided, "I must have her as my wife." He came down, and with his very, very deep voice, he said, "Please tell me, O lovely woman with shapely limbs, what are you doing in the forest meditating all alone?" She said, "My name is Vedavati, and I am the daughter of the great Brahmin sage Kushitvaja. And my father has told me to perform tapasya, meditating on the lotus feet of Vishnu, praying that he will be my husband." Ravana, when he heard the name Vishnu, he became intolerably angry. And he laughed. He said, Vishnu is just an insignificant fool. I am Ravana. I am the conqueror of the universe. I desire that you be my wife. You come to my capital of Sri Lanka and enjoy with me. And I will give you all the pleasures that you could have ever desired. When she heard this, she said, this is impossible. My heart belongs to Lord Vishnu, and I will not be touched by any other man. He said, you come and you let me enjoy me by your free will, or you let me enjoy you by force. But you will not get away from me. I have conquered the universe and I will conquer you. Then he grabbed her by her matted hair. But by her mystic powers, she chanted a mantra. And through that mantra, her hand became as sharp as a sword, and she cut her matted hair and got away. He was standing there holding the hair, but she went away. Then she told him that I will return. And then when I return, I will be the cause of your death and the death of your entire dynasty. Then meditating on the lotus feet of Vishnu, she increased the heat of the fire element in her body by her mystic powers, and she burned herself into ashes. Ravana later on was traveling, and he came to Ayodhya, which was at the time ruled over by a king named Anaranya, one of the great kings who were descendants of Ikshvaku. And he challenged the city. Anaranya came out with all of his armies. It was a very exciting battle. But ultimately, Ravana destroyed the whole armies and then ruthlessly killed the king of the Raghu dynasty. Just as the king was about to die, he cursed Ravana that someday one of the descendants of my dynasty will be the cause of your death and the destruction of your entire race. Ravana wasn't worried about these curses so much. And he just left Ayodhya because it was just an insignificant kingdom of this world. For him, it was just play, killing, eating. Ravana was terrible. He had a whole army of rakshasas that traveled with him. And wherever they went, they killed people, they tortured people, and they ate their flesh and drank their blood. And the tastiest of all species is humans. And the special delicacy amongst humans is rishis and brahmins, because they're very pure. Because they're very pure and they perform nice tapasya and they eat only prasad, their flesh and blood tastes the best. Even the rakshasas accept this fact. So this is what they did. Whenever they would see rishis doing yajna, they would destroy their yajnas and they would just tear them apart and eat them. They were ghastly beings, horrible, cruel. Anywhere they went, there was just baths of blood everywhere. That is when he got his name Ravana. There was just weeping and crying anywhere he traveled. He went to Amaravati, the abode of Indra. While he was there, he happened to see playing in one of the gardens the beautiful celestial maiden named Ramba. He was so infatuated by her beauty, he came down and ordered her to become his consort and let him enjoy her. She told him, "I'm already married. I'm married to your brother's son. I'm married to Nala Kuvera. Therefore, you are my uncle. You're Uncle Ravana." "You cannot, Uncle Ravana, you cannot have sex with your own niece. It's immoral." But Ravana was so much infatuated by her beauty that he didn't consider any of these moralities or immoralities. He ordered her. So she said, "This is impossible. I must be chaste and faithful to my husband." So Ravana forcibly grabbed her, pushed her on a rock, held her down, and illegally, immorally, violently molested her. After he was finished, she was so ashamed, she just ran away crying and weeping, completely brokenhearted, right to her husband, Nala Kuvera. "This is what happened. This is what Ravana has done to me." Nala Kuvera was angry and crying simultaneously, but he understood, there is nothing that I can do against Ravana. He's too powerful, but I can curse him. So he pronounced a curse officially that if ever again you try to take a woman to enjoy sexually by force, you will immediately die. When Ravana heard that curse, he didn't take it so seriously because he felt, what woman will not surrender to me? But at the same time, curses by demigods and great sages are very powerful. So he felt, just in case, I better not take the chance of ever enjoying with a woman by force. Another time he was flying by Mount Kailash, and he saw Nandi. And Nandi was in the form of a monkey. And Ravana started harassing him. So Nandi said, "I'm the servant of Lord Shiva. And because you're harassing me, I curse you that there will be a dynasty of monkeys who harass you." Then Ravana decided that he would just pick up Mount Kailash and take it. So he put his hands under Mount Kailash, the abode of Shiva, and started lifting it up and shaking it and shaking it. And Parvati was sitting with Shiva and she was getting shaken all over. She said, "My Lord, what's happening?" So Lord Shiva said, "I know what's happening." So he put his foot down on Mount Kailash and he pushed it down. And all of Ravana's 20 arms went down and they were being crushed under Mount Kailash. They were crushing his arms, his 20 hands, that makes 100 fingers. They were being smashed. Huh? 200 fingers. Oh. That makes it even more painful. So he was struggling and struggling and struggling, but there was nothing he could do. So some of his ministers said, "This is Lord Shiva's power. You should start offering prayers to Lord Shiva." So for hundreds and hundreds of years, in this condition of utter distress, he was offering prayers to Lord Shiva. Then Lord Shiva was pleased. He's Ashutosh. He said, "I am pleased with you. Now you can go." Ravana said, "But you give boons to who pleases you." He said, "What do you want?" He said, "Give me the boon of one of your most deadly weapons." So Shiva gave him one of his weapons. Ravana, as he was becoming more and more successful in conquering, he was becoming more and more proud. Then Narada Muni came to him and said, "Why are you dealing with all these insignificant demigods? Why don't you go to Yamaraj? He's the god of death. If you conquer him, then there's no death." So Ravana went to the abode of Yamaraj, and he saw some Yamadutas and started slaughtering them. Yamaraj started sending more Yamadutas, and he was slaughtering all these Yamadutas. Soon there was hundreds of millions of Yamadutas out there fighting with Ravana, and Ravana was so powerful. Finally, Yamaraj himself came out to fight. It was an incredible battle, where Ravana was displaying all kinds of mystic powers. And ultimately, Yamaraj just thought, "Now this demon must die." He was just about to kill him when Brahma appeared. Brahma told Yamaraj, "You should not kill him, because I have given him benediction that he would not be killed by any demigods. You should not interfere with my benediction. The Supreme Lord will appear as a human being and he will kill him." So Yamaraj, to honor Brahma's desire, he disappeared. After Yamaraj disappeared, with all the Yamadutas, Ravana was thinking that, "I'm so powerful that he ran away in fear. That means I have defeated Yamaraj. Nothing can stop me now." He went on treacherously harassing the universe. Thus, the Supreme Lord Ram was to come to perform his wonderful pastime of killing his eternal associate, Jayan Vijay, who appeared as Ravana as Kumbhakarna. And the story of Ram's appearance is narrated in the great Vedic literature called Ramayana. Valmiki Muni, at one time, you know the story, he was a hunter. But Narada Muni, by his compassion, revealed to him what will be the sinful reactions of going on with this type of life. So hearing Narada Muni speaking and believing him, because he was such an honest and compassionate devotee, he asked, "Please tell me how I can be purified of my sins and how I can become a devotee of the Lord." So knowing he was too sinful to chant the name of Rama, he told him to chant the name of Mara, the name of death. But by chanting Mara again and again and again, he found himself chanting the name of Rama. Mara, 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 Rama, 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 Rama. He was constantly chanting the name of Ram. When he became completely purified, Narada Muni came back to him and described to him the beautiful pastimes of Lord Sri Ramchandra. What happened is Valmiki Muni inquired from Narada, is there anyone who has lived on earth that's truly moral, that's always compassionate to other living beings, that's purely pious, that's so honest, never tells a lie, that has no sinful desires or selfish thoughts in his heart? Is there any perfect human being that is living anywhere in this world? So Narada Muni said, yes, I will tell you the story of such a perfect human being. Narada Muni then explained the birth and the life of Lord Ramchandra in great detail. Upon hearing this, Valmiki Muni was overwhelmed with ecstatic love for Lord Sri Ram and completely purified by hearing this story. One day, Valmiki Muni was in the forest and he saw two beautiful birds. They were cranes by species. One was a male and the other was a female. They were enjoying together very happily when a hunter came and shot an arrow and killed the male. The male bird was laying in a pool of blood. The female bird was weeping and crying in great distress. Valmiki Muni, who previously was a hunter, now he had so much love and compassion toward the feelings of every species of life. He began to cry to see the suffering of these birds. And he pronounced a curse. The curse he pronounced in beautiful Sanskrit meter. It was four lines with eight syllables in each line. He said, may this hunter who has caused so much pain and suffering to these birds when they were just enjoying together, suffer without any peace endlessly. After he pronounced this curse, he felt very, very bad. He was thinking, I should not have cursed. I should be equiposed. Great sages should not be cursing others. So he felt very, very bad. He went back to his ashram and met one of his disciples, who was Bhardraj Muni, and told him what happened, that it's very bad what I have done. I have cursed this hunter. But at the same time, please hear the beautiful, beautiful poetic expression that I cursed him with. And he sang the curse. At that time, Lord Brahma appeared. Lord Brahma told Valmiki Muni that you should compose Ramayana, the beautiful life story of Sri Ramchandra, and you should pass it down to your disciples for the purification and joy of the whole world for all time to come. Valmiki Muni asked, How will I be able to do such a great, great service? Lord Brahma told him that you should sit down in meditation and pray to Lord Sri Ramchandra, and he will reveal every minute detail of his pastimes. And then you should compose it in exactly the same type of poetry as you curse the hunter. Valmiki Muni sat down in prayer to his Guru Maharaj Narada Muni, his Param Guru, Lord Brahma, and at the lotus feet of Sri Ram. And by the mercy of Sri Narada Muni, he was able to see the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra being enacted within his heart. He saw every detail. He was right there, day and night, watching Ram's Leela. He was hearing all the discussions and conversations of everybody around in Lord Ramchandra's divine pastimes. And he perfectly memorized everything he had seen. But then he was thinking, I must speak this great treasure house of transcendental knowledge to someone. But who is qualified to realize it and remember it? This Ramayana that he had memorized in his heart was 24,000 slokas that he had composed. In that every sloka is in that same type of verse that Brahma told him. He saw no one qualified. But one day, the two sons of Sita Devi and Ramchandra, whose name were Lava and Kush, they came before him to offer their very humble and obedient services. Valmiki Muni concluded that these two disciples, being the sons of Lord Ram himself, full of all virtues, so absolutely pure in heart, they never forget anything they hear, and they have full realization of whatever I speak to them. So they and they alone are fit to be the recipients to pass on through Parampara Ramayana. Valmiki Muni sat Lava and Kush down and personally spoke the 24,000 slokas, which are made of 500 cantos, thousands of chapters. And Lava and Kush, they sat and they heard it. Valmiki Muni not only narrated it to them, but went into great detail of teaching them how to properly understand it. And after putting his heart and soul into training them, he sent them out to preach the glories of Ramayana. Lava and Kush, wherever they went, they sang so beautiful. Their voices were more sweet than the veena and the flute. They sang each verse, and the words that came out were like ambrosial nectar. They were the topmost musicians. They were so beautiful to look at. Although they were sages with matted hair and tree bark or deer skins, their bodies had the effulgence and the moon-like beauty of Lord Ram himself. So wherever they went, Lavan Kush utterly captivated the hearts of their audience. They came to Ayodhya. They were dancing through the streets of Ayodhya, singing Ramayan. Lord Ramchandra, he happened at this time, as you know, Lavan Kush were born after Ramchandra had already come back to Ayodhya after his 14 years of exile, and he was the king. When he heard these children, beautiful little children, singing so sweetly Ramayan, he invited Lava and Kusha to come to his palace. He brought his brothers, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna, as well as his ministers and his family members, and told them, please, with rapt attention, hear what these two young sages are singing. It is nectar to the ears. It will purify our hearts. It will give us the highest perfection of life to hear this narration. Everyone sat down where the Janmastan is now. That place used to be Palace of Ram. Now I don't know what it is. But if you have spiritual vision, then you don't have to go through all these political things to make it what you want it to be. But it's actually the eternal abode of Lord Ram. If only we could see it. So, in that palace, Lava and Kusha narrated Ramayana. They began by describing the glories of Ayodhya. Ayodhya was originally built by Vaibhasvata Manu. Vaibhasvata Manu was at the time one of the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu. He was the ruler of the entirety of mankind. And Ayodhya was the capital of all of humanity. Vaibhasvata Manu built this city to be the most glorious city on earth. His son was Maharaj Ikshvaku. Through the descendants of Ikshvaku, many, many great, great kings, one of which was Sagara. Sagara was the one who, one of his descendants, Bhagirath, brought the river Ganges down to the earth. But of all the kings, one of the very, very greatest, Lavan Kush explained, was Dasarath. Dasarath, he developed this city to such glorious proportions. He was such a pious and pure-hearted soul. The city of Ayodhya was like the kingdom of God on earth. Even the abode of Indra could hardly compare to it because of the piety of the king Dasarath. All of the buildings were made of the most precious stones and jewels. There were beautiful parks. Every tree had fruits and flowers blossoming practically throughout the year. All the animals we're friendly with one another. And the birds were always singing very, very sweetly. The Brahmins were very pure. They never made any mistakes in chanting their mantras. The Vaishyas were all wealthy and prosperous and rich. They were very obedient to the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas were always humble and respectful and willing to follow the advice of the Brahmins. And the Sudras were always blissful because they were so nicely being protected by all the other castes. In Ayodhya, no one ever spoke a lie. Everyone was completely honest. In Ayodhya, no one ever was hungry. No one ever got sick. There was constantly people, musicians, singing in the streets. There was constantly people dancing in the streets. Every day was a festival in Ayodhya. And Dasarath Maharaj, he treated every citizen like his own child with such love and concern. And all of Dasarath's ministers, they were humble, they were pure in heart, they were pious, they were honest, they were very expert in all of their responsibilities. And Dasarath had armies and weapons that no power on earth could come to disturb them. There was such happiness, such prosperity, such luxury in this great city of Ayodhya. But yet, Dasarath, was feeling aggrieved in his heart. Because although by his loving service to the Lord, he had created such a perfect city, perfect kingdom, he did not have any son to hand it over to. Therefore, there was no one qualified to take this responsibility of king after he were to leave. You see, in the days of Vedic culture, it was the most important responsibility of a king to train up a son to be the king after he retires. And that was his compassion to the citizens and his service to the Lord. Just like today, fathers, when they have some wealth, it's one of the most important responsibilities they have to have a will by which their estate will be properly taken care of. What to speak of a king who is ruling the world on behalf of God? So he felt that all of his activities in the service of his citizens were incomplete and ultimately a failure if he did not have a son. Dasarath Maharaj had 350 maidservants. And of them, there were three principal queens, Kaushalya, Sumitra, and Kaikeyi. For years and years and years, he tried to have children, but he was never successful. Except he had one daughter of the name Shanta. But no sons.
Dasarath Maharaj revealed his heart to his ministers. He approached the great Brahmins and sages and told them how sorrowful his heart was and presented the idea that perhaps if I perform the Ashvamedha Yajna, horse sacrifice, and please Lord Vishnu, he will award me with a son. The chief minister of Dasarath was named Sumantra. He was also his dearmost trusted friend. Sumantra explained to Dasarath Maharaj a story that he had heard. Long ago, Sanat Kumar told the forefathers of Dasarath that there will be a king named Dasarath who will be born, and he will have no sons, but he will call the great Brahmin Rishyashringa to perform a yajna, and by this yajna the Supreme Lord will be born as his son. So Dasarath, he immediately contacted his very good friend Romapad Maharaj. The story of the history is this, that Romapad Maharaj, being a very, very dear friend of Dasarath, had no children. So Dasarath Maharaj allowed Romapad Maharaj to take care of his daughter, like an adopted father or adopted daughter. So Shanta, although very, very dearly loved by Dasarath, was raised by Romapad Maharaj. Romapad Maharaj was the king of the province of Anga. Romapad Maharaj committed a very serious mistake. And due to the offense of the king, the entire kingdom had to suffer. This is a very important philosophical principle to understand. It is a serious responsibility to take the position of leadership on any level, spiritually or socially. Because if someone takes the position of a leader, they are responsible to act according to their duties. Srimad Bhagavatam explains, you have no right to be a king, a guru, a teacher, or a mother or father, unless you live and speak in such a way that those who are subordinate to you never have to take birth in this material world again. Whether you succeed or not is beyond your control. A father can be a perfect Krishna conscious father. Maharaj Anga was a pure devotee, but his son was Vena, a dacoit. But still, it is our duty to behave properly and speak properly. And if we do not, not only ourselves, but everyone around us has to suffer the reaction. So one who is king, if he commits sinful activities, the reaction is shared by the whole kingdom. Now these days, people say, that it really doesn't matter whether a king is moral or immoral as long as he's doing his job. You know, in the United States of America, these things are being debated recently. That he's doing a good job, the economy's good, whether he's doing moral or immoral, that's his own private. Externally, that may be somewhat true. But on a higher level, when you take a position, if you do pious work, the whole kingdom flourishes immensely by it. And if you do impious work, the whole kingdom suffers. So due to the offense of Maharaj Romapad, the whole kingdom was suffering terrible drought. This drought was so bad that nothing grew. There was no food. In the kingdom, the city, people were starving. And in the forest, there was nothing to eat for the animals. So what did the animals do? The lions, the tigers, the wolves, the bears, they would just come charging into the city to eat people because there was nothing else to eat. It was terrifying. And you know, when there's no money and no food, even good people can go bad out of desperation. So Romapad Maharaj, he was wondering what to do. So he was consulting his ministers. He was so repentant to the core of his heart. And they explained that there's a great devotee named Rishi Sringa. He is born of the great sage Vibandaka. If he comes to this kingdom due to his purity and piety, it will bring rains and your whole city will flourish. But they told him the story that this Vibandaka, it's a very instructive story. Vibandaka, he lived with his brother for some time. He was a very, very close friends. But his brother, somehow or other, married this lady. And she didn't like Vibandaka because Vibandaka was a great sage. Actually, Vibandaka, he was doing his tapasya, and this apsara came and completely disturbed his mind and said, I want to have a child with you. So he had a child, and then she left. So he was left with the child, who was Rishi Sringa. He went to live with his brother, and his brother's wife was always harassing him. So he just decided, forget women. I've had enough of women. And if I really want to raise my child properly, he should never see the face of a woman. So he made a law within his hermitage that no woman was allowed to come into it. Only very, very pure sages in the mode of goodness were allowed to be there. So Vibandaka was a very, very powerful yogi. And he raised his son, always doing sacrifices, because in Treta Yuga, that was the bhajan that people were doing, was yajna. But Rishi Sringa was so pure in heart. He had no material desires. In fact, he didn't even know there was such thing as a female. They wouldn't even allow female animals to be there. It was really a staunch brahmacharya ashram. So he grew up in this way. So Romapad Maharaj was wondering how to get Rishi Sringa to come, because he wasn't allowed out of his father Vimbandaka's hermitage. So they decided to send the most beautiful ladies of the kingdom to go there. So they went when Vibhandaka was not around. They found out he went out for some seva. And they came just in the outskirts. And they were singing and dancing and like that. And Rishi Sringa saw them and thought that they were great rishis, because he never saw anything but a great rishi. So he thought the only people that exist are great rishis. So he invited them to come in. And he wanted to wash their feet and offer, because he was taught to serve the great rishis. And he was serving them very nicely. And he asked, "What can I do for you? How can we serve you?" And they said, no, not like that, not like that. Anyways, they glanced on him and they did all other things to him. And somehow or other, there was something going on in his heart that he couldn't understand. He never felt like this about rishis before. He had met so many different varieties of yogis and rishis, and he felt enlivened and inspired, and sometimes he felt different shaktis and powers, but this was something very different. These rishis, he just wanted to be with them. So he went back to them and he said, "Please, let me serve you." So they said, "All right, you come with us on our boat and you come to our kingdom." So they had a very beautiful boat. So he left and he went on the boat and he came to the kingdom where Romapad Maharaj and everyone was waiting for him. And Romapad Maharaj greeted him with such reverence and respect and honored him and offered him all sorts of gifts of love. And by Rishi Sringa's coming to the land of Anga, immediately clouds and rains, and immediately there was grasses growing and trees were blossoming with flowers and fruits, and the rivers became full, the lakes flourished. Now Romapad Maharaj was very afraid that what will happen when Maharaj Vibhandaka finds out what has happened. So somehow or other, Rishi Sringa became very much attracted to the beautiful sister of Ram, future, but this, the adopted daughter of Romapad Maharaj Shanta, and they were married. So he was living there as the best of all Brahmins. So Rishi Sringa was sent to Ayodhya to perform this yajna. They sent the horse with an army of the best soldiers of Dasarath to travel throughout the whole world. And if anyone did not pay their taxes to Dasarath to give money or wealth for this yajna, then there would be a battle. And only if everyone on earth accepts that he is the king and we are the subordinate, he is the emperor and we are the subordinate kings, there cannot be an Ashwamedha yajna. You have to be the emperor of the planet before you can do this yajna. The horse came back. Then all Brahmins, sages, and kings came to attend, including the great king Janak. Vishishtamuni
was the head priest of Ayodhya. And he made all the elaborate arrangements for this yajna. They had to build palaces for all the different kings that were going to come to attend the yajna. They had to have opulent foods, all facilities for Brahmins. The yajna was performed on the banks of the river Sarayu. Rishyashringa performed his yajna by chanting every mantra with perfect meter and pronunciation, great depth of meditation from his heart. Toward the culmination of this sacrifice, the various demigods appeared to claim their shares of the sacrifice. Then Lord Brahma personally appeared. At that time, the demigods approached Brahma and they said, "We are all miserable. This Rakshasa, Ravana, is causing such chaos. He is so cruel and murderous that we are being subjugated by him moment after moment after moment. He's terrifying the entire universe. Something has to be done about him, and you're the one that gave him all these benedictions." Then Lord Brahma meditated on Lord Vishnu to come to the yajna to claim his share. In the midst of the sacrifice, the supreme form of Lord Narayan descended on his bird carrier Garuda. Lord Brahma, on behalf of the demigods, appealed to him, "Please descend into this world to kill Ravana." Lord Vishnu explained to them that through this yajna, I will expand myself into four forms. And my primary form, Ram, will be the cause of the death of Ravana. Then Lord Vishnu, after saying this and accepting his share of the sacrifice, returned to Vaikuntha Dham, Svetadvip. Then Lord Brahma explained to the demigods that this is the message that the Lord has given, that all of you should expand yourselves into your own offspring in the monkey dynasty of the Vanaras. And you should have these expansions of yours should have all the power, knowledge, and strength of yourselves. You should be able to take any form you like. You should be gigantic. You should be strong. You should be learned. And you should be willing to give your life to kill Ravana as assistance to the Supreme Lord, Sri Vishnu. Rishyashringa then offered the most auspicious of all oblations into the sacred fire. At that time, one of the representatives of the Lord, who he had sent from Vaikuntha, appeared from the fire. This personality was so beautiful. He was very large, like a mountain. He had a bluish complexion. He had beautiful, beautiful silken garments, and he had an effulgence which was glaring gold. He was so pleasing to see. In his hands, there was a pure golden pot filled to the top with celestial nectar. in the form of payasam, milk cooked with rice and sugar. That celestial denizen of Vaikuntha gave the golden pot to Rishi Shringa and then disappeared back into the fire. Rishi Shringa gave the pot to Maharaj Dasarath and told him that you should divide this amongst your three wives in four portions. One portion to Kaushalya, one portion to Kaikeyi, and two portions to Sumitra. And from them, four children will be born. Dasarath Maharaj, he was crying in joy. Divided up the payasam and gave to his three wives. With great happiness, they drank that nectar. Immediately after drinking it, their hearts were filled with divine happiness. Instantly, they could experience the presence of God within their wombs. These three ladies were effulgent with the divine mercy of the Lord. After, I believe it was almost 12 months of the children within the wombs of their mothers, on the ninth day of the bright moon, the month of Chaitra, from the womb of Kaushalya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared in the great city of Ayodhya. Shri Ramchandra Bhagavan ki. When Dasarath Maharaj, Kausalya, and all the inhabitants of Ayodhya saw the lustrous beauty and divine qualities of this little baby child who they named Ram, they were filled with bliss. Their hearts instantly fell in love with Lord Ramachandra. A few days after this, Bharat was born from Kaikeyi. And soon after that, a couple days later, from the womb of Sumitra, two children were born, Lakshman and his younger brother, Shatrughna. The festivities that were taking place here in Ayodhya are extraordinary to hear about. Throughout the streets, it was like rain after a long drought. You see, the kingdom loved Dasarath. They loved him more than they could love even their own fathers, because he was the king and they trusted him. He protected them. He nourished them. He brought them happiness at every stage of their life. Because he was unhappy to have no children was the only grief in anyone's heart in the whole city. When the city of Ayodhya saw these four most beautiful children, they were all expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Vaikuntha worlds, It is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. On the four sides of Goloka Vrindavan, there is Vasudev, Shankarshan, Aniruddha, and Prajumana. Vasudev appeared as Ram. Shankarshan appeared as Lakshman. Prajumana appeared as Bharat, and Aniruddha appeared as Shatrughna. These were the four forms of Lord Vishnu that appeared simultaneously in the city of Ayodhya, of the Koshal province. There was dancing and singing. The whole kingdom was decorated with beautiful garlands and festoons and flags. There were celebrations and festivals going on day and night. Dasarath Maharaj was giving immense charity to the Brahmins and to other kings and to the sages, and giving charity to everyone. As Lord Ram grew, his constant companion was Lakshman. Day and night, Lakshman was there spontaneously to serve Lord Ram in every aspect of his life. They were inseparable. Lakshman was like the second heart and soul of Lord Ram. That is how close they were to each other. The same relationship was there between Bharat and Shatrughna. Shatrughna's life and soul was only to assist, to please, and to be the companion of Bharat. Dasarath's heart was thrilled with joy to see the intimate, loving relationships between all the four children. They never, ever, ever fought. They never quarreled. Have you ever heard of children like this? From what I have heard from fathers who I have known, as they grow older, it's one of the greatest longings in their life is to see that their children will not become enemies with each other. How many fathers have that experience? If you don't raise your hand, it means you're not a father or you are not truthful. Because if you love your children, you want them to love each other. Otherwise, you don't love your children. And these days in Kali Yuga, it's the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. As soon as children come out of the wombs, they start fighting practically. Little babies. We have seen. Fighting over toys, fighting over who gets more affection, fighting over who gets more attention, fighting over who can do things better, fighting over who can be a better fighter. And then as they get a little older, they become more competitive in other ways. And sometimes if they become business or if they go into politics, they become enemies. They become competitors. It's very heartbreaking to parents when they see their children fighting. But what greater pleasure is there to see that your children respect each other, love each other, and simply want to serve each other? This is the kind of children Dasarath Maharaj had. Therefore, he was the happiest man. He was teaching his children all the best things of his life.
when they would play and fall to the ground, Dasarath would be right there to pick them up, and he would wipe the dust from their face and dust from their body. He would just cry upon seeing his children. He gave them so much love, so much affection. He disciplined them with such care and concern. He taught them everything he knew about everything, about God, about worship of God, about how to run a state, how to mobilize military, how to fight with weapons, how to play games. He taught them everything. And they were so grateful to receive it. When Lord Sri Ramchandra and his brothers were hardly 16 years old, Vishwamitra Muni came to visit Ayodhya. Vishwamitra Muni was one of the most celebrated of all great saintly persons. He lived in the Himalayas, but he came down to the plains of India to a hermitage called Siddha Ashram. There he was performing yajna. He would, in those days, never come to any cities. He was always in the forests amongst other great sages and rishis. The fact that Vishwamitra Muni paid such a special and rare visit to Ayodhya was a cause of great honor and celebration to Maharaj Dasarath. He came out to meet him. He offered Vishwamitra Muni his throne to sit on. Maharaj Dasarath, who is the king of the world, wanted to show what is a real kshatriya. The nature of kshatriya is to be very humble, submissive, and obedient to the qualified Brahmins. If they are not, then they are not real kshatriyas. He washed the lotus feet of Vishwamitra Muni. He offered arti to Vishwamitra Muni. He brought palatable foodstuffs to Vishwamitra Muni. Came and gave him beautiful gifts, sweet words to welcome him. After pleasing Vishwamitra Muni in every possible way, he said, "Whatever, my whole kingdom belongs to you. And anything in this kingdom is yours. My life is at your service. Whatever you ask of me, I will do. How may I serve you, O best of Brahmins?" Vishwamitra Muni inquired, "Are you serious?" "You will fulfill whatever I ask of you?" Dasarath said, "Yes." Vishwamitra Muni further inquired, "Is this a promise?" "Yes, of course. It is my promise to you." "Amongst many great sages, I am living in the forest, performing yajna for the benefit of all human society. But there are deadly rakshasas who are continuously spoiling this yajna. I desire that you give to me
your son, Ramachandra, to slay these Rakshasas.
When Dasarath Maharaj heard this,
it was like a thunderbolt crashing against his soft heart. He was shocked, momentarily paralyzed. He could not speak, could not breathe, fell to the ground. When he got up, tears were flowing from his eyes, trembling. Ask anything, but not Ram. Please know that I live moment after moment only due to my love for Ram. He's my life and my soul. He's the only source of my happiness. He's the very essence of my life. Even a moment of not seeing him, my heart becomes filled with the anxiety of separation. If I do not see him for an hour, I have to run, try to find, to look at him. I cannot live without him. You can take anything else, but not Ram. Besides that, just a child. He hasn't even finished his education. He doesn't fully understand how to use proper weapons. He's immature and inexperienced. He cannot fight against Rakshasas in the forest. I will bring my armies, an entire Akshohini division of soldiers, and I will personally ride on my elephant to lead that. And we will protect your sacrifice. And we'll bring Ram with us. But please do not take him away from me.
Vishwamitra Muni, upon hearing Dasarath's reply, his eyes became red. Dasarath saw this and asked, "Can you tell me who are these Rakshasas?" "Maricha and Subahu. They are the servants of Ravana." Vishwamitra Muni explained to Dasarath Maharaj that Ravana is creating terror to the entire world. However, little sacrifices of the sages, like what we're doing, are below his dignity to personally come and destroy. So he sends his associates to do it. Maricha and Subahu are his associates. But actually, the real person that's causing this disturbance is Ravana himself. When Dasarath Maharaj heard the name Ravana, terror struck his heart. Ravana! No one can stand before him. Myself and all my armies, we will be extinguished in a moment if we stand before him. He has defeated even the gods of the heavens. And you want my young, inexperienced, tender-limbed, small child, Ram, to fight against him? Impossible! It cannot be! Vishwamitra Muni exhibited a type of anger that no one could even look upon him. He said to Dasarath, "Either you give me Rama to take with me, or you keep Rama here, and your honor and the integrity of your entire dynasty will be eternally destroyed. Dasarat Maharaj was being torn in two, trying to decide what to do. At that time, Vasishtha Muni spoke. He said, "Please, you have given your word. You cannot break your promise. Your son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one can defeat him. And besides that, he's with Vishwamitra Muni. I have personal experience of the power of Vishwamitra Muni. He himself, by his mystic yogic power, he could destroy Malicha and Subahu in a second. Why doesn't he?" He has already explained. Because he's conducting the yajna. And if the priests of the yajna in any way show anger, the whole yajna is spoiled. So he cannot show anger. But he will protect your son. Have no fear. Send Ram immediately. Dasarath called Ram and also called Lakshman and told Vishwamitra Muni, "Here is Ram, but please take Lakshman also, because he cannot live without Ram." Then Dasarath turned to Lord Ramchandra, his beloved son, who Dasarath Maharaj could not possibly perceive as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however much philosophy he was preached, because he loved him as his child. He told Ram that I am turning you over to the care of Vishwamitra Muni. Please love him and serve him, obey him as he is your own father. Give him the same respect that you give me. Lord Rama, thoroughly detached, touched his feet with his father and walked out the door with Vishwamitra Muni. They entered into the forest. Vishwamitra Muni, by his divine vision, understood clearly the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this particular incarnation. He wanted to perfectly assist the Lord in his mission. Lord Ramachandra appeared in the dynasty of human beings. He wanted to show by his behavior the perfect conduct of a king, of a son, of a brother, of a husband, of a friend, of a master, of a disciple. Vishwamitra Muni's service was to be the Guru Maharaj of Lord Ramchandra and teach him the most essential truths, both spiritual as well as those which would assist in his mission. They lived in the forest together. They traveled from one forest grove to another. He taught Ramchandra Gayatri Mantra and various other mantras, how to chant it perfectly, when to chant it properly. One day, I believe it was actually, they would go to sleep on the ground made of nice leaves. And in the early morning, during the Brahma Muhurta, Vishwamitra Muni would wake up Ram and Lakshmi. Tell them, now it is time for you to take your baths. Now it is time for you to do your meditations. Now it is time to offer your oblutions to the sacred fire. He was so pleased by the humility and the service of Ram and Lakshmi. Each day, Lord Ramchandra and his beloved brother Lakshman, they would go out and collect wood for Vishwamitra Muni to perform his yajnas. They would bring water for him. In the evenings, they would massage their Guru Maharaj's feet and legs. They would go and collect roots and berries and fruits from the forest and make nice plate and offer it to their Guru Maharaj. Being pleased, Vishwamitra Muni one day told Ram and Lakshman to perform their achman and offer their prayers, because he was going to teach them a very powerful special mantra. The mantra is called Bala and Atibala. By chanting this mantra, you will never become tired. You will never become weakened by hunger or thirst. And you will gain extraordinary power in any situation of life. They traveled, and Valmiki's Ramayana, which is being narrated by Lava and Kusha to Lord Rama himself, he explained this extraordinary journey, how Sri Ramchandra and Lakshmana every day with such eagerness to hear, they would ask Vishwamitra Muni various questions as they traveled along the forest path. They came to the confluence of the Sarayu River and the Ganga. Lord Rama asked, can you tell me the history of the river Sarayu? Vishwamitra Muni explained how long ago Lord Brahma, who was born from the navel of Garbhodakshay Vishnu, as he was creating the universe, he created a lake called Mansarovar on the great mountain, which is Kailash, the abode of Lord Shiva. Seeing the great devotion and love of Lord Brahma in his service, Lord Vishnu filled that lake with the tears from his eyes. The Sarayu is a river that has its origin in Mansarovar. And it is flowing from Mansarovar, and at this place it is coming to meet the holy river Ganges. Lord Rama asked him, can you tell me the story of the river Ganges? He narrated in very elaborate detail several chapters of Valmiki Ramayana, the whole history of how the Ganges originates and comes to this world. When they came to that place where the Ganges and Sarayu met, there were many great sages and rishis living there. It was a beautiful place. And the sages seemed so happy. Lord Rama asked to Vishwamitra Muni, can you tell me, why is this place such a nice place? What is the history of this place? What is it called? And who are all these sages? Vishwamitra Muni replied that long ago,
Lord Shiva performed his tapasya here. And because of that, it became permeated with his shakti. It was here that Kandarpa, who's also known as Kamadev, decided, with the influence of the demigods, to break Lord Shiva's meditation. Because at the time, the demigods required Lord Shiva for some important business, and he was immersed in meditation. So, who better than Kamadev could distract you from your meditation? Do any of you have this experience in your life? So Kamadev made all sorts of wonderful, wonderful arrangements to distract Shiva's mind. But Shiva was just detached. Kandarpa, sending apsaras and beautiful winds and sweet music and scented flowers, still Shiva remained fixed. He became angry, and he took his most celebrated of all arrows, the arrow of passion, and shot it into the breast of Shiva. Lord Shiva turned around to see who has done like this. There he saw, hiding in a tree with a bow in his hand, was Kamadev. Lord Shiva looked at him. His third eye opened. Kandarpa was burned, not into ashes, into nothing. His body simply ceased to exist. And Vishwamitra Muni explained, because of that, Kandarpa had no body. Therefore, these days when he attacks people, nobody sees him. He's there, right in front of you, but you can't see him. His name became Ananga, which means one who has no body, no limbs. And due to that pastime where Kandarpa became Ananga, this province is called the Anga province. And the great sages and rishis, knowing that this is the place where Lord Shiva performed this wonderful pastime, and this is where Kandarpa assumed this incredible formless form, they have come here since that time, and they do their yajnas, and they're very, very happy. That is the story of this place of pilgrimage. They bathe at the confluence of Ganga and Sarayu, and they continue their journey. They came through these beautiful, beautiful forests with scented flowers and birds singing. And they saw so many saintly persons performing their religious activities. Lord Sri Ram, Lakshman, and Vishwamitra Muni entered into a particular area of the forest that was haunting.
Everything was dark. There was no leaves in the trees. There was no birds singing. There was only the shrieking of vultures. The whole atmosphere was full of darkness, ignorance, and fear. There was no animals, no humans, nothing was there. Lord Ram asked Vishwamitra Muni, "Can you explain where we are? What has caused this terrible atmosphere to be in such a beautiful forest?" The Vishwamitra explained that there was a yaksha whose name was Suketu. And he was a very pious yaksha. He had a daughter of the name Tataka. She was very beautiful, very simple, very sweet person. Her beauty was so enchanting that it attracted whoever would see her. When she came of marriageable age, Suketu offered her hand in marriage to a Rakshasa of the name Sunda. Now Rakshasas and Yakshas, according to caste regulations, they're allowed to marry together. So they roamed and lived in the forest very happily together. And Sunda and Tataka, they had a son of the named Maricha. And they were all very beautiful people. But one day, Sunda, being a Rakshasa, he misbehaved in the presence of Angira Muni. Angira Muni cursed him to die. He died. Tataka and her beloved son, Maricha, were so angry. They attacked Angira Muni to kill him. When they did that, by the chanting of mantras, Angira Muni just sent them in total defeat, but also cursed them. He cursed Tataka and Maricha to be huge, ugly, deformed, violent, cruel Rakshasas. So Tataka, she lost her beautiful, shapely form and became a hideous demon. Large, large, large in size, with big, ugly, bulging eyes and hairs all over her body and a bulging stomach. She was so ugly and terrifying, and her mouth was so big she could just eat anything. Then she performed tapasya because she had such a cruel heart at this time, and she gained the benediction of the strength of 1,000 elephants. And her son, Maricha, he became just a savage, powerful, man-eating Rakshasa. Nobody could stand before him in battle. He's terrifying to men, to gods, to rishis, to everybody. And this Tataka and Maricha, because a rishi killed their husband and father, they hate the rishis. And their only business is to torture them and murder them. Hare Krishna.
A particular forest is the residence of Tataka. Lord Sri Ramchandra, you should kill her. Don't think that because she's a woman, you should be sentimental about her. She must be killed. Lord Ramchandra went into the forest, and he took his mighty bow without an arrow in it. He just twanged that bow. It made such a loud reverberating sound that the whole earth shook at the twang of his bow. Tataka, when she heard it, she was inflamed with anger. Who has come to my forest? These human beings? She appeared before them in this ghastly, grotesque form to kill them. She cried out to them that today you will be my food. She attacked them. But Lord Ramchandra shot some arrows. She was such a great mystic that she went into the sky and created total darkness. She covered the sun, the moon. There was nothing but pitch darkness. Then from the sky, she started throwing down thousands upon thousands of gigantic sharp-edged rocks like rain. The Lord Sri Rama, with his celebrated bow and arrow, was breaking all of those rocks into powder. She was creating all kinds of terrible mystic illusions. But whatever she did, Lord Rama dispelled. She was becoming angrier and angrier and angrier. But they could not even see her. How to shoot her? How to fight with her? She was invisible. She kept tormenting them with various attacks in various ways. Ultimately, Lord Sri Ram dispelled all of her illusions, and she appeared before them personally. The Lord, with his arrows, cut off both of her arms. She was screaming, howling in pain, angrier than ever. Then Lakshman, with his arrows, he cut off her ears and the tip of her nose. And even though she was such a forbidden Rakshasa, still, every woman is proud of her beauty. So having her nose tip cut off and her ears very humiliating. Angrier than ever, she attacked. Vishwamitra Muni told Lord Ram, it's just about to become dusk. Her power will become much greater than ever. It's almost impossible to kill these Rakshasas in the nighttime. I can see that you're sentimental because she's a woman. I know it's the law of morality that women must always be protected, that women must always be honored and respected as a mother. But there are exceptions when it's a woman like this. She has devoured thousands and thousands of Brahmins and sages. She's caused havoc to so many people's lives. Ram, give up your sentiment and kill her now. On Vishwamitra Muni's order, Lord Ramchandra pulled out his celebrated bow and arrow and he shot an arrow right into her breast. She screamed violently, fell to the ground, and Tataka gave up her life. Shri Ramchandra Bhagavan ki. Vishwamitra Muni was very happy to see this. So he decided to give Ram more benedictions. He had them sip water, chant their mantras. Vishwamitra Muni had told him, "I will now teach you the mantras by which you can invoke the missiles and weapons of the demigods, which will make you insurmountable in any combat." In those days, these mantras had to be heard from a guru. And you had to be taught how to chant them perfectly. This is the power of sound vibration. In this age of Kali Yuga, everything is gross. But actually, the subtler you get, the more powerful things are, even on the gross platform. Just like sometimes we fight with our fists. We pound each other. That's pretty gross. But someone who knows karate or kung fu, they can beat someone who just fit because it's a little more subtle. They understand not just the brute force of fist against bone and flesh, but they know certain power, certain points of vulnerability, and they use different types of quickness of air and energy. So it's a subtler form, but it's more powerful. And then you have weapons. You used to have cannons, where just a big ball comes and hits you in the head. And then they put some dynamite in the ball, and it hits you in the head and it explodes. But then they got subtler. The atom. Atom is a very, very subtle form of gross energy. And if you can somehow or other split the atom and extract the energy of the atom, then you have an atomic bomb. It's actually a very subtle form of gross manipulation. And then you have nuclear bomb, which is subtler than the atomic bomb because it's dealing with subtler forms of material energies. And what type of gross manifestations of destruction they can create. However, in previous ages, sound vibration was understood to be the most powerful of all elephants. Through sound vibration, you can manipulate the various aspects of this world in such a way that no gross effort could ever compete with. These kshatriyas, when they would shoot their bows and arrows, the Atiratis and Maharatis, they would chant mantras. These mantras would invoke certain astras or weapons, which were oftentimes the weapons of the demigods. Example, Brahmastra. The Brahmastra is powerful enough to destroy an entire planet in a second. That's its power. But so accurate that it could go into the womb of a mother and kill the child without even hurting the mother. And by chanting the mantra, you can invoke it and let it loose toward your target. It doesn't matter where your target is, it will go right to it. Hare Krishna. So Vishwamitra Muni taught these mantras to Lord Ramchandra, by which the various weapons of the gods would be at his disposal. Lord Ramachandra, being very compassionate and thoughtful, he asked Vishwamitramuni, can you teach me the mantras how to withdraw these missiles if I shoot them and change my mind? Ah, that's something people can't do today. If you press that button, it's gone. There's no button to change your mind. But these missiles, you can send a Brahmastra, you can send the weapons of Shiva or Indra to your enemy, and then you can chant another mantra and it'll come right back. Vishwamitramuni then taught Ram the mantras to reverse the effects of these celestial missiles. This is a very important part of Ramayana, because later on, during the battle with Ram and Ravana, we find that he's sending these different astras that he learned from Vishwamitramuni. Because Lord Ramachandra wanted to teach the world, although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the role of a human being, he wanted to give all credit to his devotees. He wanted to teach the world, give all credit to your seniors. Take no credit for yourself. Never consider anything to be your own, but always be grateful and willing to offer respect, adoration, and give all glory that comes to you to your superiors. That is a sacred lesson that we learn from this incident. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of all causes. Whatever the demigods have is given by him. But the principle of humility is even there in the Supreme Lord. Then they came to Sinhasrama. When the Supreme Lord Sri Ramachandra saw the beauty of Sinhasrama, there were thousands and thousands of pure-hearted Brahmins meditating, taking their glass, offering ablutions in the water of the Ganges. Some were doing the holy fire sacrifice. Some were chanting Vedic hymns. They were all illustrious due to their moral and spiritual qualities. Vishwamitramuni explained to Lord Ramachandra not only the history of the place, but he also explained the history of himself and his whole dynasty, genealogical forefathers. Then he explained that these very pure-hearted and saintly devotees, they are performing yajna, but they're always being harassed by these two demons, Maricha and Subahu. I have brought you here to kill them. When the devotees saw their Guru Maharaj, Vishwamitramuni, coming with their worshipable Lord, Rama Lakshman, they immediately came running and offered them all respect, gifts of affection, brought them nice fruits and roots from the forest, honored them in so many nice ways. And the sages explained to Ram and Lakshman that we are in so much distress because so many of us are being killed and eaten by these demons. And every time we perform this yajna, at the very end, they spoil it all. So Lord Rama said, perform your yajna and we will be here to protect you, because we have the blessings and the instructions of our Guru Maharaj upon us. So Vishwamitramuni told them, let us commence the yajna. He said to the Lord, this yajna will be, I think it was 7 days. But they'll never come until the very end of the seventh day. And then they will come and howl and scream and throw buckets of blood and human flesh and everything else abominable on our yajna and kill everybody they can kill. They began the yajna, chanting mantras. First day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day, Ram was sitting there with his bow and arrow, waiting. At the end of the seventh day, when the yajna was just about to find its culmination, the sky turned black. They heard terrible sounds of screaming. Chilly winds came to their bodies. All of a sudden, from the darkness of the sky, blood started pouring on everybody. Then fat, flesh, and other disjointed and torn apart limbs and bones started flying all over like rain. Then stool and urine and immense quantities of pus flying all over everyone. The sacrifice was being ruined. Then Maricha and Subahu, two gigantic, ghastly ogres, appeared. And Lord Ram, with one bow, he chanted a mantra. I think it was an astra from Vayu he invoked, and he shot it into the chest of Maricha. And Maricha went flying back 100 yojanas, that's 800 miles, into the ocean. Subahu came to seek revenge. He shot an arrow into the heart of Subahu, who fell to the ground, vomiting blood and died. Then all of the other Rakshasas came to seek revenge, and he shot different arrows and scattered them in all directions. Thus, all the Rakshasas were defeated. And the demigods showered flowers on Lord Shiva. The sages celebrated, and Vishwamitramuni was so pleased, he gave profuse blessings upon Shiva and Lakshmi. Then they performed their yajna and completed it perfectly to the satisfaction of everyone. The rishis of Sinashram told Lord Ram, now that we have completed our yajna, by your great mercy, we are going to Mithila and a pilgrimage. That is the holy city of King Janak. There is a big sacrifice taking place there. And there is a big, big bow of Lord Shiva that we want to see. We're going there. Would you like to come with us? Vishwamitramuni invited Ram. Let us go. I would like to show you the holy city. They began their journey. On the way to Mithila, they crossed the holy river Ganges. They spoke the glories of the river Ganges. They visited different hermitages of great devotees of the Lord. Thus they came to the outskirts of Mithila. Just on the outskirts, they came through a beautiful hermitage
there is no one there. Lord Rama asked Vishwamitra Muni, can you tell me why this beautiful hermitage, no one is here? Vishwamitra Muni explained that this is the ashram of Gautama Rishi. Gautama Rishi has a wife of the name Ahalya. They were living here long ago. One day, Gautama Rishi went to take his bath. While he was gone, the king of heaven, Indra, he was so much attracted by the beautiful bodily features of Ahalya. He desired to enjoy her. By his yogic powers, he assumed the form of Gautama Rishi. Indra, in this disguise, knowing Gautama Rishi was away, came before Ahalya and said that, oh my dear wife, I know it's time for our yajna and everything like that, but I have a great longing to enjoy with you. So please satisfy my desire. Please understand that King Indra is not an ordinary person. He's a very charismatic celebrity. And when Indra comes before a lady, in whatever disguise he may be in, he's very powerful. Ahalya knew that this is Indra in the disguise of my husband. But in the weakness of the moment, she could not say no to the King of Heaven. But after some time, Ahalya knew that my husband, the real Gautama Rishi, he's coming soon. So you better get out. So Indra, afraid of the power of Gautama Rishi, left the hermitage. But on his way out, he happened to come across Gautama Rishi. But he was still in the form of Gautama Rishi. So Gautama Rishi understood something suspicious is going on here. So he went into his meditation and understood exactly what happened. So he cursed Indra. I'm not going into any details of that today. If you want to know, you can read Valmiki's Ramayana. But it was a very painful curse for Indra. More than that, it was embarrassing. And for one who is honored, dishonor is very difficult. Then to his wife, he cursed her because she has misused the beautiful body that God has given her for the service of her husband and Krishna. That she would be without body. So she pleaded with him, please, please do not do this. It was a mistake. I beg forgiveness. I didn't mean it. It was just an accident. Please forgive me. So Gautama Rishi explained to her that because of your sincerity, and because of your repentance, I give you this benediction. That when the Supreme Lord descends into this world as Lord Ramachandra, along with Vishwamitra Muni and his brother Lakshmana, he will come to this place. And when he sees you,
And when he places his foot upon you, then you will become completely purified of all material contaminations. Then you will attain the perfection of life of pure devotional service. Then we will be reunited. Ahalya then became disembodied. According to some, they say that she became a stone. Vishwamitra Muni explained this to Lord Ram. And Lord Ram, with his spiritual vision, was able to see her. And on that stone, he placed his lotus feet. And by the touch of the lotus feet of the Lord, and the glance from the lotus eye of the Lord, Ahalya became completely purified and manifested her original beautiful form. There she surrendered to the Supreme Lord with tears of love in her eyes. And Gautam Rishi appeared also. Together they worshipped Lord Sri Ramachandra, offered all respects to Vishwamitra Muni. The Lord blessed them. And then Gautam Rishi and Ahalya reunited, performed their devotional service again together. Gautam Rishi told his wife that actually this was a benediction. Our relationship now is on a higher and sweeter platform of pure devotion than it has ever been before by the causeless mercy of Lord Ram. From Gautam Rishi's ashram, they entered into the kingdom of Mithila. The news came to Maharaj Janak. Vishwamitra Muni has come with his disciples to Mithila. Immediately, personally came out to greet them. This was the etiquette demonstrated by these great souls. Maharaj Janak was such a regal king with great armies and subjects, but yet when an advanced devotee would come to his kingdom, he would not just call him to have a special appointment with them, but he would come out to wherever they were to personally worship them and bring them to his palace and offer them his throne. Sometimes when our devotees in the past were doing life membership in Bombay, like our Giriraj Maharaj, they would sometimes go to some wealthy people's office. First they'd have to go to the secretary, then the secretary would call the owner or the president. The president would say, tell him that I'm busy today, they should come some other time. Or if they're lucky, they'll say, tell him he can have an appointment 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Or if they're especially very magnanimous, they'll say, he's a Vaishnav, he's come, send him to my office now. This was like a great privilege. You get to enter into his office. But those who are like King Janaka, they will come running out. You shouldn't come to me. I should come to you and greet you and wash your feet. But then, they don't like to do that. Because if you do that, then you have to say, how can I serve you? And they may ask you for something. he came out running with all sorts of gifts and articles of worship, brought them back to the palace, greeted them so nicely. Jarak said, the perfection of all of my duties of a king have fructified today because a great devotee like you has come to purify and sanctify our kingdom with your lotus feet. Then he asked, who are these two beautiful personalities that you have brought with you? Vishwamitra Muni introduced them, that this is Ramchandra and this is Lakshmi. They are the two sons of Dasarath. And they have just come to Siddhashram. And they killed the two terrible Rakshasas, Maricha and Subahu, with all their armies to protect our yajnas. The chief priest of King Janaka was named Satananda. Satananda wanted to extol the glories of Vishwamitra Muni to Maharaj Janak, as well as Ram and Lakshmi. But before describing the glories of Vishwamitra, Satananda, this great Brahmin priest, he introduced himself. He said, I am the son of Gautam Rishi and Ahalya. And although they are two such great personalities, I think you may know what happened to my mother. Have you been on your way here? Did you go through their ashram? And if you did, what was it like? So Vishwamitra Muni explained that Lord Ram glanced upon your mother and she once again became Ahalya after so many thousands and thousands of years. And her heart was completely purified. And now she is reunited with Gautam Rishi performing their worship to the Lord. Satananda, the son of Gautam Rishi and Ahalya, was so overjoyed to hear the mercy of Lord Rama upon his mother and father. Then he explained the glories of Vishwamitra Muni. Upon hearing it, King Janak was struck with wonder. They spoke for many hours. It became little late at night, as it is tonight. Maharaj Janak, with great love and affection, he told them, then let us meet again tomorrow morning. Tonight let us have prasad and take rest. So following your footsteps, we should take prasad and take rest, and then we will meet tomorrow morning.